Helen Brown has been, well, very well known as a columnist, author and feature writer for probably longer than she cares to remember. Her personal life has been a roller coaster of triumph and tragedy, and she's taken to expressing this through her columns and her books, something that's touched a particular chord with her readers. A couple of decades ago, she lost her young son, Sam, who was knocked down and killed by a car in Wellington, and the grief that followed was almost unbearable. After years of reflection, she began to realise that there was another dimension here, perhaps. The cat that Sam had so wanted duly turned up after his death and became a virtual saviour of the family. So now Helen Brown has told the whole story in a new book entitled Cleo, How an Uppity Cat Helped Heal a Family. The book has become a runaway bestseller, a phenomenon. I asked her how she herself accounted for the success of the book.
I really don't know. It's just been a surprise. The only thing I can think of is that I dug really deep. I got as close to my kind of emotional core as I allowed myself to while I was writing it, and maybe that's what paid off. I don't know.
That's clearly what has grabbed most of the people who read it. It certainly grabbed me. I wasn't quite sure how deep you were going to go. Tell us about the way in which this unfolded. Because you haven't written about the loss of Sam, your son, as far as I know, until this time.
Not for many, many years, Chris. I wrote about it at the time, just a few columns, back in 1983. And, you know, it was a frightening thing to do, really, because people were even less open about death, particularly the death of children in those days. And but I was writing this weekly column for the Dominion, and I thought, well, what do I do? Do I keep writing these light-hearted pieces about domestic life in Karori, or do I actually own up to what's happened this week?
Yes.
And I decided to, you know, write in very harsh terms.
Have
I
you reread those?
Only occasionally.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, you know, hard work going back to that time. But the amazing thing was, Chris, when I wrote those few columns, I got lots of wonderful letters from people, and the best letters, the most helpful ones, were from parents who'd lost kids of their own. And these were like flags or beacons of light waving across a stormy sea. They were saying, look, this happened to us too, and we survived, and you can survive too. And, you know, that was really the most helpful thing. And I think for many years, it's such a long time now, I felt I kind of owed those courageous people a debt. And in some ways, this book is about that. And already the emails I'm getting are from people who are going through quite recent and devastating loss, who are writing saying, God, this book helped me. You know, I held my eyes out, but I feel now I can see there's some kind of future. And, you know, that's really, we've got to the heart very quickly with this, Chris. That's really what's at the bottom of it, I think.
Oh, no, very much. And the cat in Cleo the cat is the other dimension. I mean, it's almost a sort of point-counterpoint here, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's grief and then a cat you didn't want.
No, well, the extraordinary thing was that Sam, our son, had seen the litter of kittens just a few weeks before he died, and he'd chosen this runt of the litter and named her Cleo. And, of course, you know, when he died, I'd forgot all about that. In fact, a lot of my memory cells have been obliterated from that period. But when this friend turned up on the doorstep several weeks after the funeral with this kitten, I thought, oh.
You threw her out, basically.
Yeah, I didn't want her. But Sam's younger brother was determined to keep her. And she turned out to be really quite a healer. A healer in a fur coat with 4 feet.
Yeah.
And because she had a lot of humour and a lot of strength, and she taught us to be resilient and to laugh. And she stayed with us for as long as she thought she needed us, which was nearly a quarter of a century.
She was 23 or something, was she?
Yeah, nearly 24.
When she died, which is about 160 or something.
Yeah,
in human terms.
I must say, she wasn't very well pampered. Maybe it's, you know, a good example of living a tough life to live long.
You were a dog person, basically, at this
stage.
You had a dog.
Yes. Yeah, we had this wonderful golden retriever, and I'd grown up in Taranaki, and Mum grew up basically as a rural person, and she taught me to be a dog person because dogs she perceived as being useful, you know. They actually could herd sheep and things, whereas she thought cats, well, maybe if they caught a few rats, they were helpful. But other than that, she thought they were slackers. And so I guess I inherited some of her prejudices. And so that was another reason I didn't want a cat.
This cat, Cleo, seems to have sized, if what you say is right in the book, seems to have sized up the whole family. Mm. And had a relationship of a different kind with all of you. And most cats don't do that. They don't seem capable of doing that. I mean, they have a kind of lineal relationship with the family. The family, you know, there's a sort of indifference to people as a rule. And yet this cat was completely different. Why? Was it because it was a rather exotic sort of part, Abyssinian, I think it was? What was it about this cat, do you think, that enabled it to go so much further and into your, almost into your spiritual beings?
Well, I guess there are cats and cats and people, Chris, you know. And I think perhaps because we allowed her to have all these other dimensions, she actually grew into them. But she certainly did have an immense personality.
Your other son, Rob, seems to have had the most profound relationship with Cleo.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, there was a communication there. He was almost channeling her thoughts about what you ought to do and how you ought to respond to the loss of Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
How profound was that at the time?
Well, it was quite almost spooky, and because I suppose I was desperately searching for some kind of spiritual solace, I wasn't sure really how to respond to it or how to respond to Rob's reaction. But I think we would just accept anything that came along. And because he was getting all this kind of material or feedback from this cat, we thought, well, we'll let it, there's nothing negative about it, it's really helping him. And you know, that seems to be being acknowledged more and more these days, the way that animals seem to function on these other levels that can actually understand a lot more than we've given them credit for years and years.
And yet we refuse to give them credit for it for some strange reason.
Maybe it's because we eat them, Chris.
Is that it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, but I know there's a long way we could go towards treating animals better, don't you think?
Oh, of course. But we don't seem inclined. I guess anybody who reads this book will have a completely different view of cats. I'm not sure that I have a different view about my cat, but there.
Oh, you never know.
Yes, well, I will sort of look at her in a slightly different way. Rob's illness... he got very ill. He got a virus, I forgot what it was.
But, ulcerative colitis, which is a close cousin of Crohn's. These two diseases seem to be increasingly common. They tend to hit young people, and they still haven't found out exactly what causes it. And it's just a devastating thing. And whenever I hear of young people going through it, my heart just goes out to them. It's a shocker to go through.
Did you, and you almost lost him at one stage?
Well, he did become critically ill with the first bout of it, and he was in Auckland Hospital, and it was a very frightening time, but he managed to turn a corner. But the result of that was he was on steroids for 5 years, and as every year went by, the steroids seemed to not work as well as they had the year before. And ultimately, the only option he was left with was to have his large colon removed, which we were cheerfully informed was 8 feet of colon.
Oh.
So that was a giant operation. I mean, lots of people go through these things. I mean, that's one thing. I don't know why, Chris. We're all trained to expect that life's going to be a jaunt from start to finish, but it's not for any of us, you know.
No, well, especially for you, it wasn't.
Well, especially for Rob, and he came through that magnificently. He had a colostomy bag for a couple of months and then a second operation that reversed that. So now he is a whole person from the outside and recently married and swimming several times a week and embracing life.
Would he have been as resilient, do you think, had it not been for, A, the suffering as a result of losing his older brother, and B, the kind of spiritual wisdom that he seemed to get from Cleo?
He's one of the wisest people I know. Of course, in fact, I think it's you should be interviewing him, not me, really.
Maybe I will one of these days.
Yeah. But I don't know, and some of it, I mean, my father was a bit like that too, but Rob really is, and yet he works as an engineer, so multi-dimensional, that
yes,
one.
Yes, yes.
And he still has this really deep connection with cats. And
really?
And dreams about them, and, you know, they talk to him in his dreams and things like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because when he first said that, I think it was shortly after Sam had died, that he had spoken to the cat, Cleo.
Yes.
And I think your mother was there at the time. How did she react to that?
Well, she wasn't
a very
wasn't
practical
sure what,
person, really.
Yes, she was. She was. And, you know, I mean, I think she felt perhaps Rob might need help. But, I mean, as I said before, you kind of, we're basically pretty down to earth in our family. And I think she realised ultimately that it was going to help him to, you know, anything like that wasn't involving drugs or surgery that was going to help him, we should, you know, try and play along with as long as it didn't get too spooky. And it never did, really. But, you know, I showed Rob, of course, has read the book, the whole family,
yes,
has before I sent it off to the publishers. And, you know, he had this kind of really spiritual experience in the Australian outback where he saw all the scenery and he spoke to someone and this person told him that it was a cat place and you know, it was really quite a strange experience, and he told his friends he was camping with that he'd had this dream, and they all laughed, and then they went next morning to this place that was exactly the place that he'd described in his dream, you know, and then they found a local Aboriginal guy and said, oh yes, we call this the place of cats. And I said to Rob, look, you know, do you mind if I put this in the book? It's a bit out there. And he said, no, you know, that's how it was.
Yeah.
Just put it in.
Spoken like an engineer.
Yes.
How far back does the idea of cats as guardians, and this theme arises through the book, that somehow this cat is looking after the family, and you obviously researched it a little bit, how far back does this idea of the cat as the guardian? Because it was almost a deified creature in ancient Egyptian times. Has it been? Is there a sort of thread of continuity right through the ages on this?
Well, not always. I mean, they were very much worshipped in Egyptian culture. In fact, I've just been to the British Museum again a couple of weeks ago and seen that wonderful sculpture of, I think it's pronounced Bastet. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. The cat goddess, and they had the most wonderful temples to her there. But as time went by, I mean, well, there were the witches' cats, and then cats have been sacrificed and burnt in their millions through the Middle Ages because of their association with evil. So I think people have all, like you, Chris, they've kind of had a mixed relationship with their cats and being a little bit intimidated by that kind of spooky side of
them. Do you think that's become embedded in the human mind? And there's a thread of continuity all the way through here, so that our attitude to cats is unlike that of any other animal.
I think it's their independence, their ability to say, oh, stuff you, I'm not going to come when you call, that we both identify with and are offended by. But I think we recognise something of ourselves in that.
You say that cats have a reputation for being more attached to places than people. I mean, they're very territorial. Well, some of them are. and a cat.
I love the way that you get an edge in your voice whenever you talk about your cat.
Well, I mean, I was amazed by Cleo. I couldn't believe that it could do the things that it was doing.
It was a she, Chris.
Oh, sorry. It, but it wasn't it. after
originally,
a while,
wasn't when, it? Yeah. Well, when she arrived, I thought of her very much as an it.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, well, yes, even less than that, I think.
One of the greatest compliments you can pay a cat is they say, gosh, that cat, it's so interesting, it's almost like a dog.
Ah, what do people mean by that?
Well, I think they mean it's has fewer cat-like qualities. You know,
it relates to humans in a more conventional manner.
Yeah.
How did the rest of the family respond? I mean, you said you bounced it off everyone else in the family. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of very personal stuff about the family. And poor Philip.
I know, poor Philip.
Takes a bit of a toweling, your husband, early on. And I know Philip, and I guess he can handle it.
He's the most gorgeous man.
Oh, yes.
And while I was writing it, you know, when he got home from work, and I'd usually wait till after I'd fed him, and we'd be going to bed,
Philip,
I'm not that bad. And, you know, I'd hand him what I'd written during the day, especially if he was, you know, part of the subject matter, let him read it. And quite often, you know, he'd say, oh, no, and groan, you know.
Really?
But then he never said, no, don't publish that, don't put that in. He always agreed that it could be aired. I don't think we realised it was going to be published in 15 countries and 8 languages at the time.
Well, I was going to ask you that. I mean, how many, 15 countries,
well,
8
no,
languages?
I'm not sure. I've run out, I've stopped counting countries because it's all a bit blurry. But I think it's 8 languages, and it's going off to Frankfurt Book Fair next month, and they're expecting to pick up some more. So I'm blown away, really.
Is it because it's archetypal? It deals with the most raw human emotions and this intriguing place of an animal in a family.
I think, you know, everyone in the world loves their family and they love their pets. And God, if we only all realised that, we'd stop fighting each other, wouldn't we?
Well, possibly.
Wouldn't want to kill each other's sons. And
yes.
You know, if we'd concentrate more on our similarities rather than our differences, I think it would be much easier for the world to get along.
How do you follow this? Is there another book on the way?
Well,
you're still writing columns
for Next
regularly.
Magazine at the moment, yeah.
Yes.
Last year I had a bout with breast cancer and stopped writing my weekly syndicated column and concentrated on the book while I was doing that. And I can tell you, it's nothing like a bout of breast cancer to make you focus your mind. Oh, this might be the last book I get the chance to write, so it better be a good one.
Well, but you got over that.
Yeah.
That means there'll be another book.
Well, no, Chris, at the moment I just like a rest.
Really?
And also there's quite a lot of, you know, I'm having to do quite a lot of work with these foreign publishers. Like I got an email yesterday from the Portuguese publisher who said, would you mind if we changed the name of your dog? Because in Portuguese, rata is a very rude word. So I had to write back and say, well, in New Zealand, it's a very pretty red flower. Yes.
Yes.
No, I let her change it.
Would you say yes?
Yes,
in the interests of harmony.
Of course.
And that's writer Helen Brown. Cleo, How an Uppity Cat Helped Heal a Family, is published by Allen and Unwin. And it's just a good read, I can assure you.